We're just normal men.
What do you mean, normal men?
We're just innocent men.
Welcome to the Red Ass Podcast, your home for Aggie sports, barbecue, music, and much more. And now your hosts, Rob White and Roy May.
Howdy, guys. Welcome back to the Red Ass Podcast. Today is Thursday, April 10th. It's Masters Week, and Roy's ready. You got to see him.
It is the most magical weekend of the year for golf.
Yes. Well, I am Rob.
I've been to the Open, so.
Hey, I know you've been out.
Roy May fight Texas. Yeah, so I've been to the Open, right. Yeah. We did that on the Scotland trip.
Right.
I would kill Augusta, man.
Yeah. Oof. I would definitely want to end up out there at some point. I'm Rob White, fighting Texas A&M class of 2014. We may or may not have some connection issues on this particular call. Roy is not at his normal spot, and he's currently running out of hot spot. So if we have a couple of drops, that's just what it's going to be, what's going to be. But we're going to try our best.
There we go. Yeah, I'm coming to you from the 7F Lodge in South College Station, from very specifically the French Chateau.
Nice.
I don't know.
Oh, the French Chateau. Well, there's plenty to get into from news this past week, not just between results, but also hires. And I figured we might as well start off right out the gate. Bucky McMillan, Bucky Ball, coming to College Station from Sanford. One of the names we were throwing around last week, and that's the name we settled on.
Yeah, so I think at this point, anybody that even follows basketball just a shred has already heard of Bucky Ball and everything that's going on. It was really nice for a lot of guys on the Texas boards who know a lot more about basketball than I do to really bring a lot of videos and explanations of what Bucky Ball is. And so that's exciting to know, you know, it's a high powered offense, but it's a pressing defense, which we've seen. He's young, he's energetic, obviously I'm sure everybody's done it a million times, like ad nauseum, but you can, you hope to be able to draw a straight line to him and Nate Oates, same concept, started in high school, worked his way to college. And it's honestly, it's a really refreshing hire, and I could Chris Beard sucked just because he's a good coach, but you also avoid the PR windfall of hiring Chris Beard.
Right, you're not wrong. At the end of the day, the last thing that we
wanted—that's my biggest thing.
Yeah. The last thing we wanted to deal with was all that PR nightmare that would have been Chris Beard personally. Not to mention, I mean, don't get me wrong, the guy's a winner, but we've seen how hires like that can go, and that's not necessarily the most beneficial thing to us. I'm excited for it, if for no other reason. I do like that exciting type of play, that kind of up-tempo, wanted to keep the pressure on play. And it always is very disruptive. And we've seen it work well at West Virginia. We've seen it work well with various other teams, including Nate Oates' team. So it's certainly something to be excited about. I'm looking forward to it.
You got to get behind it. I think there were plenty of names after this one. I really love the energy. He said everything right in the press conference and so far with the media, but he seems really genuine. He wasn't one of the top candidates, so I didn't exactly, go out and scout anything he's done. But if you just look at his track record everywhere, like he's been coaching from 17 years old, right? And just literally worked his way up through the ranks. And what he did at Samford was nothing short of miraculous relative to where that program was before he took over.
Right.
And he's now taking over an SEC program that currently doesn't have a roster. So there's an issue there, but I know he's fully aware of it. And I think another thing maybe some people are overlooking are the two assistants that he's bringing with him who had opportunities to possibly even one of them take over Samford. And one of them has been here before. So, young, energetic, recruit well, they want to score. When he said we'll have the highest scoring offense in the nation one year, boy, my ears perked up. I love defensive basketball, and we've been accustomed to rock fights for the last 4 or 5 years under Buzz Williams. But to see a high flying offense at Reed, dude, count me in.
Yeah, I mean, to see these guys go station to station, I think is going to be an exciting pool. And I think just the idea of having a guy like this, I know we've talked about it ad nauseum, but the taking a guy from a mid-major who has done well and bringing him up to the level where he actually has the resources to actually accomplish what he's going to want to do with his end goal, which is to win titles. And he said that from the get-go. I mean, one of the first things he said that he wanted to do was win titles here. So that's always a nice thought process. Certainly a change from, postseason results don't really matter. They kind of do.
Such a weird quote. But you know, it was funny because he talked about the high scoring offense. And so you think about Alabama, right? And Nate Oates, because they're such a high power, high octane offense.
Yeah.
But then he talked about, you know, I've seen some write-ups and some kind of evaluations of the teams that he's coached, and they press a lot. They play like really tough defense. And it got me thinking, like, if you could take 85% of what the Alabama offense is and pair it with, for those of you who are old enough, Nolan Richardson's 40 minutes to hell back when he was coaching at Arkansas. Like, that's just a suffocating game. Now, how you build up somebody's stamina to do that night in and night out, you got me, man. That's crazy. But I mean, and I'm sure they won't do a 40-minute press by any means, but to sit there and talk about offense and in the same breath allude to defense, there's a lot to be excited for. You just hope that, you know, what we have for NIL, it's, in the grand scheme of things, it's not like highly competitive. So it's going to be tough, and we're going to have to give him some grace. If he's able to perform in the first year, I think the NIL coffers will open up for basketball. But my guess would be at this point, there you're going to have to prove it to me kind of thing. And there's not as many big time donors for, you know, for basketball as there are for football at A&M. And that's, you know, that's going to be the same for pretty much every SEC program you run into, where football's still going to be king. But and baseball, obviously, you know, will come in second at most of the schools. My, you know, Kentucky. And so it's tough to develop that NIL program and get the money rolling in because of what these kids are asking for. That kid at Tech got $4 million to stay in Lubbock. I mean, you'd probably have to pay me $4 million just to visit Lubbock, but $4 million, dude. $4 million. What are we doing?
That's a lot of money for one basketball player, one coach, one whatever, doesn't matter. That's a lot.
Yeah, it's that one is just tough to wrap my head around, quite frankly. But yeah, super excited. You know, it's the buzz that comes with a new hire. I did not mean to use that word. It's the excitement. Yeah, whack. It's the excitement that comes with a new hire. And I think, you know, for the first time in a long time, we've got somebody that's really young and really energetic, and honestly, in the very, very dawn of his career, quite frankly.
Sure. Yeah, and this is a great opportunity for him to grow that profile. And I like the idea of him ending up here at a spot that he could potentially stay a long time. You know, I think that'll be a really nice benefit for the basketball program. Once again, there's going to be a lot of wait and see. There's going to be a lot of getting getting your players lined up, getting who you need out of the portal, who you recruit, all that fun stuff. But everybody's got to do it. So.
It could be some growing pains, and we're just going to have to be able to accept that. But you know, there's one thing Aggies love, it's Buc-ee's, the gas stations and the quarterback. So he's going to fit right in.
Slot nicely at Texas A&M with the name Bucky. It just rings. But
It just reeks of Texas A&M, dude. It
reeks of
does. I love
Texas A&M.
it. I'm here for it. I'm absolutely here for it. This is one really weird, like old man yelling at clouds kind of thing. At the press conference, I was really thrilled that they didn't like force him to put on a maroon blazer. Like, hold up the jersey. I like that. I know that's something that's so infinitesimally important, but you know, I like that they were like, just come here, be you, and let's go. His parents being there, like, it's I just so far so good, right? We're 0-0 for next year, so.
Exactly. We're 0-0 heading into next season. On the note of the video that dropped whenever he first got here, as a Yale leader, I would love to hear your perspective on this. As a former Yale leader, there's a lot of people who obviously get all up in arms and talk about do Yale leaders need to be more involved with everything around campus like we see? You know, you understand the arguments, people throwing those around. I just want to hear your perspective on it because I'm kind of curious.
Man, those arguments have been going on since before I was at school. They happened when I was at school. They'll happen after. Those arguments probably have been going on since, I don't know, when do we let women on campus? Pretty much then.
Yeah, 60s.
My take on it is I don't mind the Yale leaders being there at that. I don't know that they necessarily need to be quite as front center as they were. Because again, this press conference is about Bucky. It is, okay? Having them out there leading the war hymn, I'm 100% for. A lot of people talking about, the dance team and all that. The dance team's a big part of basketball games, so the
They
dance
are.
team needs to be out there, something like that. For a baseball hire, we don't need anybody. All
No.
right? We don't need anybody for a baseball hire. For basketball, dance team should be out there as well. Because in case you haven't been to a basketball game, the dance team is on both ends, on the baselines. And they do their timeout stuff, and sometimes they get out on the court and do their routines. But when the Yale leaders lead yells, they do the yells too, because the dance team are students, believe it or not. And so I would have enjoyed, since they put in as much effort, into basketball games as, the spirit band and the other, having to show up to all the home games and all that stuff. I'd like to see them out there just because it correlates directly to Aggie basketball.
Right.
But again, Yale leaders are at basketball. So until Yale leaders aren't at basketball, then, and even if you want them there, there's literally a physical positioning that you can probably work on.
Right.
But again, like, I'm going to root for Yale leaders being at events and being at big events for Texas A&M, because whether people like it or not, we're the ambassadors for the university. And whether that's good or bad, whatever the feedback is, when it's bad, we don't care. Like, Yale leaders don't give a damn if somebody's like, "Man, Yale are so stupid." I'm like, all right, well, whatever, dude. Like, it and A&M has changed so much, right? My dad came, it was all military, all male, obviously, and that was only, shit, 60 years ago,
Yeah, not that long ago.
So yeah, 60 years is a drop in the bucket, man. And so, like, Yale leaders have been around since 1907. You're just gonna kind of have to deal with that. Now, can A&M integrate the dance team better? Absolutely. Should there be a point where maybe we consider even bringing on the cheerleading squad, that even though they're a club sport, they win national championships? Let them hang out on the sideline. So, the dance team does what they do at the beginning for the intro, bring out the flags,
Yeah.
and then, throw some on the sideline. Like, I don't have a problem with that.
Me
The only
either.
problem you're going to get with me, as far as being a former Yale leader, is like the people that are saying, "We just need to get rid of Yale leaders." Well, and my response is, and I know this is a super old man response, go to another school. If the Yale leaders bother you that much, like, if you're literally like, "Man, I'm so embarrassed to be an Aggie, I'm gonna turn it in my ring," and all these morons saying crap like that, if it's the Yale leaders, like, bro, it's probably you. It's probably not the milkman guy.
Well, and
So
I
there's
yeah.
my reads.
I mean, fair enough, and I tend to agree with you on that. I mean, I'm in that same boat. It's more in the line of, yes, Yale leaders I think are quite necessary for football, and as far as they're involved in basketball, I'm totally fine with it. At the end of the day, they are a big part of our athletic department. They're a big part of the school, have been since basically time immemorial, it feels like, really.
Well,
And
and what people don't see is, so, it's 12 football games a year, right?
yeah.
Maybe 13, maybe, hopefully 15 or 16 someday. It's home basketball games and tournaments, home volleyball games, which, judging by attendance, you guys haven't been out there to complain about the Yale leaders. And they don't do baseball. But somehow, like, my senior year, we had 380 events on the calendar. So what people don't seem to understand is, between the PR training, the clean cut look, and everything else, Yale leaders are fantastic ambassadors for Texas A&M. When they go anywhere to events, how we interact, how we train these kids. And I was fortunate enough to have had literally PR training before the Army, before I got it as a Yale leader. But A&M provides that training, and just the ability to communicate and represent and just facilitate, the blasting out of the greatness that is Texas A&M. Yale leaders excel at it. So, like, you can get mad at, the 40 times you see him, and judging by season ticket, numbers, you're probably only seeing him at Kyle. You're not traveling every away game weekend like they do. All right. You're not traveling when they have to go head out at 6 in the morning, get to Oxford, do a midnight yell, wake up, do all of the game day festivities along with the association tailgate. When it's done, pretty much make sure you go to bed because you got to wake up butt ass early because you got to get back, and half of you have to go to volleyball and half of you have to go to soccer, right? And then on top of that, on Tuesday we have a conference that we have to be at. On Wednesday and Thursday, we got to be at the president's house for some sort of function where it's going to be us and Rev. On Thursday we've got to go to some function that deals with transfers or so. It's like I understand, I get the yell leaders are, they need to go away. I get that because New Army thinks they're dorky and dumb, but like nobody cares about New Army's opinion relative to the yell leaders. And but if you go old Army enough, they'll be like, no dance team, no cheerleaders, and they'll probably be like, why do we have women at A&M? So it goes both ways. But in the scope of reality that I try to live in, yell leaders play an integral part for Texas A&M and its marketing. The dance team does a great job. They put in a ton of effort. And if you wanted to bring in the cheerleaders, they're winning national championships. So clearly they're putting in the effort. So again, there's ways to integrate this to quote unquote modernize Texas A&M. But it's one of those, and it was an older commercial. And I want to say, I mean, older commercial. It might have been Roger Craig, or maybe it was one of the intros. Like, we embrace the future, but without let never letting go of the past. And it was one of the greatest marketing commercials we'd ever had. And it's true. Like, the traditions are what make this university great. Like, just because you've got something to do on April 21st doesn't mean it's not muster, dude. Like, I'm not trying to tie those two together, but the traditions we have, and unfortunately on Bonfire, obviously it's situation, but Elephant Walk and all these, Ring Day. There's not a place on the planet that cares more about rings than we do, right? And rightfully so. Sorry, I've gone completely off the rails here, but you asked.
Well, and just kind of wrap it up, like that was, I'm kind of getting back to that point, was just, I think that there's ways that the yell leaders are absolutely involved where they need to be, and you can sprinkle in the other stuff to normalize it if you so choose, right? If you want to get the cheerleaders on the sideline at football games, I don't have a problem with that. But once again, yeah, you can eyeball the cheerleaders, but everybody's looking to the yell leaders to, I don't know, lead yells. That's exactly what their job is when they're at the games. And to create atmosphere. And you know what? They do that well, and they have forever.
And don't get me going down the rabbit hole of game day scripts, which is a nightmare. But and again, just like the Aggie dance team, if the cheerleaders were on the sideline, you know what they're going to do when we lead yells? They're going to hump it and they're going to do yells. Like, they're still students, they're still Aggies. And I think maybe that's where, with the much, much older generations, you see a break. But I would tell you that the overwhelming majority of yell leaders and Aggies in general, probably from class of even my dad, class of 66, 66 to recent, all support, dance team involvement. There's going to be some one-offs and the people that are, just angry, bitter human beings, no matter their age. But the reality is it's totally fine to involve them. And on the flip side, that press conference, no problem with the yellers being there. Just from a marketing standpoint, have another camera, have another angle, and just and only clip like the AD, the president, and the coach sawing them off. And the only other thing that I was surprised they didn't do, I didn't get to make it. The only other thing I was surprised they didn't do was have a camera that every once in a while had a shot of the crowd. Like when
Would
he
have been
said,
nice.
ask the parents to stand up, like I would like to see him.
Yeah, I'm same with you on that.
But that's marketing. That's different.
It is, but excited for Buckyball. I know I am, and
Yes.
it's gonna be a good time. I mean, we'll see how the team develops, but
I'm not blind all in, pre-flop kind of thing,
sure.
but I am willing to splash a lot of chips in the pot for Bucky. I really am.
Yeah. All right, so we're gonna pivot to the diamonds, and we're gonna start with softball. Ladies went on the road and won the series. We didn't get a true sweep because they canceled game three due to rain. However,
We would have swept them.
you would have swept them. You smoked them in the first two games, including a run rule in the sixth inning in the first game. I mean, they more than accomplished what we asked them to do last week.
Yeah, well, in homage, Val, Wyatt, I am rolling. And that's literally what the softball team is doing right now. They are, you want to talk about chugging down the tracks, right? Like it's
Yeah.
a freight train and you don't want to get caught on the tracks. They have moved up to number three. They have a massive series this weekend with LSU. But again, this is the SEC. It's not just baseball and football. The softball in the SEC is stupid good. All right. So there's not a whole lot of time to come up for air week to week. So they've got LSU, but they've got them at home. I love the matchup. And quite frankly, I love the matchup with A&M and anybody right now, the way they're playing. I'm going to the Saturday game. I'm looking forward to it. Weather should be gorgeous.
Oh.
But you, Trisha Ford is pushing all the right buttons, and it's not by luck by any means. I don't know if you saw the clip that was circulating around. I heard a at a press conference talking about how freshmen, like in the fall, they're giggling and having fun. And she's like, "That's why we don't call on you, because this isn't fun. Winning in the spring is fun. This is not supposed to be fun." And I tweeted out with the Leonardo DiCaprio. I was like, "That's my coach. Like I love that. Like I love that about her." And I think when she first got hired, there were some people with trepidation about it. I was not one of them.
No.
All right. Because at the time when the Pac-12 hadn't been dissolved,
Yeah.
Pac-12 softball was really good. All right. And she was able to have a program with relevance. And we brought her over here. And it's not just that we're winning. And I don't know if you remember, you know, when we were in school, you know, those teams in what, 13 and 14 and 15, you know, well, really 14 and 15, they were so good, but they were so senior heavy. And as soon as they all left, the program just like kind of face planted.
Yeah.
But then you look out at what's happening, and you've got Frankie Vrazel, and you've got KK DeMint, who just won Player of the Week, and you've got Lessantine in the circle, and they're not just freshmen who are given a chance to play because we're up a lot. They're contributors, and she's building this program from top. If you have contributors at the top and the bottom and everywhere in between, you are just going to continue to roll, and that is exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. There was a little bit of cut out there, but you're exactly right. The freshmen have been contributing a ton, and being able to see the contributions coming from all levels within the program, that's awesome to see. And that's just going to continue to perpetuate this program as time goes. And the fact that you're sitting here now, top three, and the two teams ahead of you are Oklahoma and Texas, who largely have been the two teams in the last, several seasons. So to be in that company, and the fact that you don't play either one of them in the regular season, what is going on here?
Bless. Well, you know, it's funny you say Oklahoma and Texas. Well, who's the third team that's been in the mix the whole time? Alabama. You
Yeah.
know, so it's just like this is the SEC. Now, granted, you know, OU and the Sips, you know, are newcomers. And all we did was make softball even more of a grind by adding those two programs because they were absolutely national powerhouses.
They are.
We, you know, with Alabama, really the only program that was able to challenge them, quite frankly. And so, but again, just across the board in the SEC, the quality of softball is just top tier, top notch. This will be one of those where it'll look a lot like men's basketball relative to how many teams we're going to stick in the tourney.
Right. It's definitely going to look like that. I mean, the SEC has always been very strong with their pool, and it's just got a lot worse now that you've added these two. It's just a fact.
Well, worse is competition, but better for the conference. But I will
Exactly.
caveat that by saying that I don't give a damn about the SEC.
No, I get that. And honestly, I think a lot of that really stemmed from me personally, the moment that Oklahoma and Texas got brought in. That's where a lot of my give a damn from the SEC went away. Not that I really was overly supportive of the individuals before then, but it's just like, oh, okay. So all that flood, all that talk about this being, oh, well, we're trying to just maintain certain markets. Nah, y'all didn't care. Y'all didn't really care. It is what it is.
Well, what's funny is there's still a couple of schools in the SEC that it's easy to root for. For some reason, it's always been easy to root for Florida for me, and it's always been easy to root for Auburn and Georgia. I like those schools. Every interaction I've had with the fans, and then just a ton of friends that I've had that are fans of those schools. Auburn is basically the A&M of Alabama, you
They
know.
are.
Florida, I grew up in the Steve Spurrier day, so it was easy to like Florida.
Fair.
And then Georgia, same. I've just so many dear friends from Georgia that are Georgia fans. You
Yeah.
know, you gotta love Oga, right?
Well, and let's talk about Georgia just as a quick aside, right? So we play Georgia everything. We haven't had Georgia at Kyle Field yet. Like, what's that all about? Like, I don't care what happens on this next scheduling. Give us a road game at Kentucky. Let us host Georgia. Let's get it out of the way. Just do it already.
Well, what's funny is, so they brought us in, they brought Missouri and us in, and they're like, look, just everybody understand it's going to take a few years to get the schedule ironed out. We're like, totally understand that.
Right.
Absolutely. And then when it almost seemed like maybe possibly they were getting the schedules ironed out, they let in two more members.
Yeah, and it got all thrown
Didn't
into.
go to pods, didn't do anything, just let in two more members, said, divisions be damned.
Yeah.
It's everybody points to the SEC for leadership, and the SEC definitely has a really big voice, but we can't seem to clean up our backyard.
No. No, you're not wrong. So,
Not
yes,
the
big series going on at Davis Diamond this weekend. Make sure you get out there. And the beauty of it is there are two, I would say, there are two sporting events going on this weekend. You've got that going on over at the Diamond. You've got baseball over at Bluebell. You've got options to get out there, and it's so pretty not to go.
Well, and I'll tell you this though, if you ain't got tickets yet though, you probably ain't going because they are sold out SRO.
There you go. So.
Like that's how good the softball team is that they are literally all three games sold out, standing room only.
That's awesome.
Russ Heffley, who's I follow on X, and he just followed me back, so I feel big time. He's one of the assistant coaches. He's the one that put that out, I believe either earlier today or yeah. But yeah, dude, it's SRO at Davis Diamond. It is going to be absolutely rocking. And shout out, I don't know if he listens or not, but Dr. Lofton texted me and hooked me up with some tickets. So I'll be sitting in the sweet seats.
Heck yeah, love that.
Yeah, look for me on TV.
Keep an eye on. All right, so to pivot over to the other diamond, we got to clarify a couple things. Number one, right, we were talking about, maybe seeing a light improvement over the course of that Kentucky series, and of course, you post 21 runs against Incarnate Word. I'm not going to sit here and say that was much of an accomplishment, but you go out there and you do it. Game one. You get shut out, run ruled, and no hit in 7 innings. And Roy and I, we were having a back and forth conversation, as I'm sure many of us were on the internet, just like, okay,
Yeah.
early's done. This is over. Fun experiment. It's time to let him go because this is not acceptable. You can't put that kind of performance on. One day later, one.
Well, I will
One,
say though,
yeah,
if they lost that first game in a different manner,
right. But
but it
look,
was.
yeah, no. Had there been fight, had it looked like a good game, which it didn't. Game one was an absolute clunker in every sense of the word. It just did not work. Everything looked kaput in that game. You turn around
Not
one,
great.
yeah, one day later, you come out and sweep Tennessee in a doubleheader, and not just sweep them. You outscored them 26-9 over the course of that day.
Dude, 11 dingers. Like, you just took their soul.
I mean, absolutely beat the hell out of them. And I mean, at their house, number one, best team in the country. The team that has been in every single comment thread underneath Kendall Rogers, underneath whoever else. Talking about how trash A&M is. They're a horrible team. Why on earth were they ever ranked number one? And then you lose that series to them.
Tennessee fans are a different lot. I'll
I
just put
love
it
them.
that way.
They're too good on the internet, man.
Yeah, it just nobody on the planet. Don't even act like it. Don't lie. Nobody saw that coming. All
No.
right.
Least of all us.
And to do it against, there's a reason Tennessee's number one. They lost some big time hitters, and you're like, whoa, boy, they're losing a ton of offensive production. What does Tony Vitello do when we're not looking? Just recruit and just keep it rolling. That's what he does. Pitching. Exquisite pitching. Their Tennessee pitching staff is fantastic. And we beat them like a random mule.
Yeah. Really, the bats that we thought we were going to be seeing all season showed up in those two games.
That was the team that we expected to have from opening day. And I got to be honest, there's got to be four guys right now in that lineup that baseball looks like a beach ball,
Yeah.
dude. Dude, Arroyo, where did that come from?
He's
2-1
looking good.
game. Cain Sorrell, but it was nice to see Cain Sorrell look like he has made a very big stride physically to where when he hits the ball, it's going to be a single no matter where he hits it. When he first came back, it looks like he can move, he can scoot again. It looks like he's pretty much back to speed. I understand, like, maybe some of that in the first few games back was trepidation because, man, hammies are, oh, hey, man, they can just bug you for years, quite frankly. But just Bear on an absolute heater, and then all of a sudden you go, yeah, but you gave up 9 runs in 2 games. I know, but this was the offense that we thought, because it seems like the pitching has been, and I know where our team ERA is, but it feels like starting pitching has got some chinks in the armor as of late. But it doesn't matter when you put up 26 runs in 2 games. And you don't want to see him giving up 4.5 runs a game, but even then, you think about college baseball, 4.5 is not an insurmountable number. You don't want to put yourself in a hole. You don't want to be having to score 6 and 7 runs every single game because you're going to run into pitchers in the SEC, even if their rotation isn't good. You're going to run into a Friday night guy that is going to be on a minor league staff next year and probably major leagues the year after that. And that's where, like tonight, right? The series starts tonight.
It does.
This is a must-win game because you have Prager on the bump. And Coach Early talked about it. He mentioned it. There's something that people are seeing with Ryan Prager where he's getting touched up a little bit. And he mentioned it. So here's my thought. Figure out what that is.
Oh yeah.
Go grab the coaching, get the pitching coach by the ear and be like, hey, guy, right here. See me? All right, we're talking specifically about Prager. We're not talking about a staff-wide adjustment. This is specifically about Ryan Prager, a dude who turned down the major leagues to come back to school. He's got the talent, clearly. What are we not doing and what are we not seeing? You have 24 hours.
Well, and like I said, you're not wrong. Like this, if this is truly a turnaround that we're seeing out of this team, and based on these past few results, right? So you score 21 against Incarnate Word. You turn around. Yes, you lose that game one to Tennessee, but then sweep the rest of them. And then you take down Sam. Once again, not much of an accomplishment this year, but you beat them 14-1 on the road in a run rule. Now,
I'm not paying much attention to Sam. I was surprised at their record when I flipped on the game.
yeah, no, they're not really on top of it this year. But now you come home. You're in front of your home crowd. You're playing against a South Carolina team that on paper should be a good series. I like to think that we should, I would love for us to take this series. Go out there and do your job. Show that we are continuing to improve.
There's no like, you lose this series, it's all but over, man. South Carolina is one of the teams that you have got to win this series. Yeah, if you can sweep them, great. But it's like sweeps in baseball in the SEC are just few and far between. They're hard to come by. But this is a South Carolina team that, and I get that what you did last weekend doesn't matter, right? Because different pitcher, baseball game. The only game is your current at bat. Don't be thinking of the past, don't be thinking of the future. But they have got to find a way to win tonight to maintain that momentum. Because again, beating Sam on the road, I mean, whatever, because they're a down Sam team this year. Other than the fact that you went on the road and we're still able to do it, coming off, not having a letdown after what you did to Tennessee. But this is where the weekends are where we see that momentum, right? And for me, it's not just winning this series. You've got to win tonight because I think you got to give Prager a little bit of juice because I think maybe he's. I don't know. It may not be a confidence thing or not. It may not be, but it'd be nice to give him a little bit of juice. Get out there in the first couple of innings, give him some run support, and really let him settle in. Because what we've seen, and we talked about this, I think last week and probably the week before, you get to the point where everybody's pressing. Everybody. That includes pitchers because they're like, man, if I give up more than 2 runs, I'm screwed. And so those pitchers seeing that offense come alive like they did, and the pitchers are probably the same as you and I. Well, we don't care how many we scored against Incarnate Word or Sam, right? We don't. What we need to see is these guys doing it against SEC pitching. And now all of a sudden, even the Kentucky series didn't go our way, but you start to see the bats come alive a little bit. And then you see what they did to Tennessee. Like, man, I've got a little cushion here, man. I can really nibble. I can choose my pitches a little better. I can go after this guy a little different. And it all of that compounds, man. This is like a 7 bajillion square chessboard is what pitchers play, basically, pitchers and catchers. And having, excuse me, having that confidence from an offensive performance like we've seen. And I mean, if you want to call it and you take the Friday Tennessee game out of it, a bit of a trend line to the positive, that's what you hope to see trickle down to the pitching staff. So they're like, man, I've got some room. I've got some wiggle room. It's not the end of the world if I give a two-run homer.
Well, and we talk all the time about the mental game of baseball, and you saw it on the in the dugout over the courses of games 2 and 3 against Tennessee. The guys were looking like they were having more fun. It certainly seemed like they were a lot more loose. They were doing their job, and it just everything was lining up. It's like you could see the momentum was shifting even in the way that they were holding themselves. So if we can maintain that over the course of this series, and let's take game one. Set the tone. Go win game two and give yourself a cushion for game three. Let Miles Paton do what he does. Now, let's time out and look ahead a little bit, right? Because there's a very funny scenario that could play out as it stands. So, if you've been paying attention to the rankings, Tennessee was number one. We knocked them off. Currently, Arkansas is number one. That's our next road series. Let's just say, I'm not saying nothing, but just let's say A&M takes care of business in that series, right? Cool. All of a sudden, who's number one again? Texas the next week. And then what happens after that? If we knock off Texas, LSU is possibly number one after that. So you could hypothetically face number one 4 times, 3 times in a row. The SEC's mean.
That would be epically hilarious, quite
I mean,
frankly.
well, I'll take my dream scenario at this point. I've talked about dream scenarios. My dream scenario now is we were the number one team, get swept out of that spot, get sent up the river as it is, and then go on a revenge tour for the rest of the season. If you're number one, you're going down to that number one team at the start of the season. That is a dream scenario to me. And not to mention, you win all of those series. That puts you in a much better position to actually make the postseason at this stage. Because at this point, we have to win games. And I mean, people are saying minimum probably 13 games. And right now,
Yeah, well, I think that's a bare minimum.
that's a bare minimum 13 games, and you're sitting at 3 conference wins. You need 10. You need 10 conference wins out of South Carolina, Arkansas, Texas, LSU, Missouri, and Georgia. Now,
Big
I'm not as
tall.
worried about Missouri. Georgia's got a good offense, but those 3 series back to back to back are going to be that's going to be our key. That's going to be so important, and it all starts by taking care of business against South Carolina starting tonight.
You know who we're not playing this weekend? The number one team. So you have got to find a way to win this series, if not sweep it.
Win this series, sweep it if you can, for the love of God. But once again, I'm gonna eat a little crow on that from last week. I'm glad the boys came out, did their job. I'm very happy for them. Can they maintain? That's the big question. So
Well, I mean, that's the biggest question.
that's the biggest question.
It's not maintaining its consistency. Are we consistently that team, or are we consistently the team we saw first weekend in SEC play? Which are we?
Which are we?
Not to say that a team can't change throughout the course of the season.
Right. Well, we'll see what happens. So, starting tonight, South Carolina, big series. Jumping back in. So there were, I didn't see a lot in terms of questions today, but in the meantime, I figured I'd just go ahead and talk a little golf since it is Masters Week. Who are you looking at? Possibly getting on top, maybe potentially winning their first Masters. Who do you think is going to win?
Well, I mean, Augusta is set up for dudes that can bomb the ball and putt, right? That's why you always see Bryson DeChambeau do well there, because he can bomb the ball and putt. So as long as he's accurate, well, I mean, it's bombing the ball with accuracy, obviously. I'm a huge Rory guy. I love Rory, man. So I'm rooting for him to win this weekend. I could see DeChambeau being in the mix. I was at at TexAg this morning, and Matt Dawson talked about he's a big Morikawa fan. I like Colin Morikawa as well. What's funny about the Masters is I just love watching it, man. I generally don't have any sort of deep-seated rooting interest, Until you get to like Saturday midday and you start seeing things start to unfold. And then it's easy to say, like, man, I'd really like to see him win it, or I'd like to see him win another one. So obviously Scottie Scheffler is always going to be in the mix. He's just a machine. But yeah, so if for rooting interest, I'll take Rory. For winning it, I could see Scotty win another one.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And I'm with you
Yeah, as
though.
far as people that have more, I don't think Morikawa's won one, has he? I
I don't think he has.
don't think Morikawa has a green jacket. So it'd be fun to see him do it.
Yeah. Well, Scotty and McIlroy definitely going to be keeping an eye on them as the whole tournament goes. Speaking of golf, going back to last week, so me and the boys, we broke out our clubs for the first time in a hot minute. And went and did a little golfing in San Saba, Texas. We went out there, and
That work out.
it's not a bad little course they got out there. It's set up nice. It's got a couple of nice little water features. You're hitting over water a couple of times. But yeah, me and my partner for the game, that was Kyle, my lead guitar player, Villarreal. Kyle, he and I ended up winning. Doing our, doing pairs. We basically just did best ball off of each spot and just kind of rolled along from there. But just to keep the pace of the game up, and we had a lot of fun with it. It was good. We've been enjoying getting back out there for that, and we're gonna go play when we're in Tyler coming up on Saturday. So looking forward to that too.
Yeah, I definitely need to go hit the links, that's for sure.
Yeah, I went out to the driving range today. I bought a new pair of shoes. I've been looking to get a new pair of golf shoes for a long time, so finally bit the bullet and bought those and went out and
Look good, play good.
look good, feel good, play good. And you know what? All of a sudden, my biggest issue had been my drive. Like, I feel like I'm always slicing on my drives. Like, they're always, because I'm a lefty, they're always kind of curling off to the left. And I'm like, I just need to get these centered up. So I went out there and practiced all my iron shots and then went with my hybrids and eventually was hitting my drives, and they were going pretty darn straight. So I'm like, okay, we got a good feel for it. Arms sore, so we're doing good. We've put in the work.
Yeah, I think I'm actually planning a tournament coming up.
Nice.
I think it's next month. Yeah, I think we're trying all to go get out to the course in a couple of weeks. But
Good.
the best thing is for me, whenever I take a massive break from golf, the first couple of rounds back, I just smoke everything because I forgot all my bad habits.
Exactly. They all go away. They all fall out of the head.
Problem is once I start playing too often.
Yes. And then you start getting hyper fixated on every little tidbit of it. Trust me, I've been there.
That is
Done that.
correct.
Yep. So your upcoming weekend, you mentioned softball on Saturday. What else are you up to?
So I've actually got a client flying in from Denver. Went to school with him. They are moving to the greater Houston area, kind of the north side. And so when I'm not at softball, I'm going to be down, in the spring Klein Tomball area, showing homes pretty much all weekend.
Yeah. Fun. I will be down a little further south of y'all tomorrow. We're going to be at the Galveston County Fair over
Nice.
in Hitchcock. We'll be opening for Braxton Keith, who recently got some interesting press. It wasn't his fault, really, but basically there was a little back and forth between him and one of these other artists that's really big on beer slinging at the shows, and he was like, hey, this ain't a whatever concert. We're playing here. Like, we're not about all that. So we're gonna be hanging out with that guy this weekend, as well as playing up in Tyler. So that'll be good. And then, yeah, next week, gonna be leaning in towards the thing I'm most excited about, and I'm really excited to share this. I get to drive up to Lubbock on Tuesday. I know you mentioned driving to Lubbock's a big pain, but I'm going up to Lubbock because I'm gonna go see my niece for the first time.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, I get to go
Yeah,
see
but
my.
it's not like you're moving to Lubbock.
No, I'm just gonna go up there to go say hi to my niece Blake. Mom and dad have been posting all the nice, cool pictures. She's itty bitty, but apparently she's this little sweetheart. I can't wait to hold her like a football. It's gonna be great.
That's good
Looking,
stuff.
yeah, looking forward to seeing my niece. So that's gonna be a lot of fun. But yeah, that's about what I had today. All the excitement that we had going on here. Be sure to follow us on all of our socials. That's going to be Roy May 15 on Twitter, Roy May Jr. on Instagram, Rob the Slapper on both, as well as the Red Ass Podcast. If you guys got any additional questions for us, please fire in on all platforms. Leave a comment, like it, subscribe I'm on YouTube, wherever you're watching. Just give us a little follow. We appreciate that so much. Well,
And share it.
I am Rob White. This is Roy May. We are the
I
Red
am
Ass
Nathan Wren.
Podcast. Take care. Beat the hell out of South Carolina. Beat the hell out of LSU. And gig them. Have yourselves a great rest of your day.
Good.